Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Well, the good weather of last week, it might be gone for today, maybe for the next few days from what we heard earlier on from Alan O'Reilly. Now, while it was glorious for many of you, I know it would have indicated that hay fever season is now well and truly upon us. So whether you're a new sufferer or someone who's been dealing with this allergy for years, my next guest will have, we hope, some welcome advice for you on how to combat this often tricky seasonal condition. Respiratory consultant physician at Talley University Hospital and Trinity College Dublin and member of the Asthma Society of Ireland's Medical Advisory Group, Professor Patrick Mitchell is here. Good morning to you, Patrick.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Now, hay fever, as I said, it's a seasonal allergy. Regardless of the weather, it still affects people. The good weather, though, that we had over the last little while, it doesn't help if you're a sufferer, does it?
No, absolutely not. Hay fever or allergic rhinitis is actually a very common disorder affecting up to 20% of the population, so one in five people. If you don't have it and you don't have a family member who has it, it can be dismissed or certainly relegated to a pretty trivial ailment. But it is a really significant ailment, and I see patients constantly, GPs see them, indeed several referrals to the Asthma Society, where they offer really good helplines now to actually address these issues. See the burden of this disease and this disorder in individuals. It accounts for billions of euros per year spent throughout the European Union. It accounts for a significant amount of lost time in school, days off school, not able to participate in sports, not able to participate in work, and something called presenteeism. So presenteeism, essentially absenteeism is what we know, you know, you're off.
Yeah.
Presenteeism is where you're actually in the workplace or you're in university, you're in school, but you're not firing on all cylinders.
And you feel awful.
You feel absolutely awful. So for those individuals who don't have hay fever, think of your worst cold and multiply it by 10.
Mm-hmm.
And that's there for months.
You mentioned the Asthma Society there, and I was talking about your own involvement. What's the connection here between hay fever and asthma, or is there one?
There absolutely is one. They're both probably rooted in the same type of immunological response, in that you have an inappropriate and exaggerated immune response to pollen, for example, so hay fever. Now, pollens typically don't cause problems for the vast majority of us, but in individuals who are sensitized to pollens, they cause essentially that the tariff that your immune system charges is Donald Trump-esque.
Right.
So it really goes after it, and there is a huge exaggerated and inflamed response, which is why patients who have this need to know that they have it and need to get on top of it. And one of the things which the Asthma Society, indeed all our GPs out there who look after these patients primarily and our specialist centres are doing, is really trying to educate patients to get on top of this earlier, because pollen seasons are, as a result of climate change, happening earlier and there is more pollen in the air. And it's interesting, we're talking about the weather, Claire. It's a rainy day today. All that pollen that's in the air is going to settle down to the ground. It'll dry up in the next day or two. A wind will whip in and it'll whip all that pollen up. So you'll see increasing counts. So people need to be aware of that and minding that.
So it'll be worse than it was possibly while the weather was very settled for a time.
Exactly. There's actually a well-known phenomenon in Australia called thunderclap asthma, which actually leads to fatalities every year, where essentially the pollen is actually whipped up off the ground through a thunderstorm, brought up high into the atmosphere. The pollen itself gets wet. When it gets wet, it expands and it breaks up into tinier pollen pieces, which actually can penetrate the airways more deeply and cause a really severe asthma reaction.
Mm-hmm.
In answer to your question, in terms of the association with hay fever and asthma, about 80% of patients who have asthma have concomitant allergies to things like hay fever.
Right, so there is a very strong link there. Now, there'll be people listening to this and go, well, what's the problem? You take an antihistamine every day. We've these new generation ones that don't cause drowsiness. That's what you do, problem solved. Does that work?
It doesn't in everyone. It is a very useful treatment in a significant majority of individuals, but we see individuals who don't respond to it or respond suboptimally. And after that, it's really about the pharmacological and the non-pharmacological treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And the non-pharmacological treatments are actually really important. And they're common sense things, which you mightn't be aware of, but Don't hang the laundry outside if you have a hay fever allergy during the actual pollen season. It's going to actually grab all that pollen that's around the place. You'll bring it back in and you'll sleep on it that night, and you're wondering why you're waking up or having a poor night's sleep.
That's a big sacrifice to make, isn't it?
It is.
One of the great pleasures of the season.
And I get that. And I really do get that. And there are sacrifices that individuals who have hay fever and moderate to severe hay fever that they have to make. And it is disabling. But getting on top of it really does reap rewards in terms of reducing the symptom burden.
Mm-hmm. But just going back to the daily antihistamine, is it safe? Is it okay to do that?
So there was a large European study that did look at antihistamines, especially the earlier or first generation ones. And there was a small link between arrhythmias, which is heart disturbances, and antihistamine uses. That really hasn't been found out in the newer generations of the antihistamines. So they are actually a very safe medication to be using. The thing about it is to get them in early. So when you know that your hay fever season is starting and kicking in, it's to get those antihistamines on board and to be using them daily. It's to also consider other ailments or other treatments, such as the intranasal steroids, which can be really effective in people. There are oral tablets that people can take, such as Singula or Montelukast, which calm the immune system down.
We're moving on to prescription solutions now, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if the antihistamines aren't working for you, next step is your GP.
Next step is your GP, or contact the Asthma Society. They offer really good guidance on that.
Okay, let's go to some of the questions, Patrick, yes, because we're getting so many of them as we could have predicted on this one. So this listener suffers with a runny nose and watery eyes in cold and dry weather. It doesn't happen in the house. It started in the last 6 months. Never had hay fever before. Have you any thoughts on what it might be?
I mean, to this listener, certainly it sounds like it could be hay fever. A lot of people think that hay fever is an ailment that occurs in childhood, but actually we do see people developing it in their 30s and 40s out of the blue.
For any particular reason?
We don't understand the reasons why, but they can. And there are lots of hypotheses out there, but there's no particular reason that we've been able to identify.
That's what this could be then with this person.
Absolutely. So I would advise that this individual would try and take over-the-counter antihistamines to see if that gets on top of it. There are nasal rinses that you can get over-the-counter, such as cleaning out the sinuses with sterile saline water, which is salt water.
Yeah, that and people don't like the sound of those, you know, because they can be a little bit uncomfortable to use, but they're really effective, aren't they?
They are really effective, and I understand that. And the problem actually with the saline rinses is that the water that's up there can actually sit in areas of the sinuses. And if you tilt your head in an awkward way an hour or two later, it can actually come running out.
Oh, lovely.
So you don't want to be sitting over your boss's shoulder when that happens.
Yeah, but it does work, and it's worth getting into the habit of doing that.
It really is getting into the habit and learning what to do and how to tilt your head so you drain the sinuses properly, and then administer your nasal antihistamine or your nasal steroid. And there are combinations of these now, which are really effective.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine that's going to be the advice for our next listener who has a 17-year-old who has hay fever, well, almost 17, and the antihistamines have stopped working this summer. They're trying different ones, but they've no luck. So now you'd suggest, I would imagine, the nasal rinse, maybe the steroid spray in that case.
Absolutely, Claire. I think at this stage it's time to augment the armamentarium that this individual's receiving. There are combinations, as I mentioned there, of nasal steroid and antihistamine, the rinses, the Vaseline up the nose to reduce it. Actually, the Vaseline forms a sort of barrier and can actually trap the pollen that you're actually inhaling.
So where are you putting the Vaseline now? Are you walking around with Vaseline in your nostrils?
Unfortunately, you are, so you've got to be quite discreet about that. But the Vaseline does help to reduce the burden of pollen that you're actually traveling through the sinuses.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned not hanging the clothes outside. Vaseline probably will fall into this category as well. But the non-pharma solutions, any more of those or aids, things that people can do?
I mean, so pollen.ie is a great website which will actually allow you to track the pollen count. So, and it does that per county, so you'll know, okay, today is actually a high day. If you're going out and you're mowing the grass, you might be advised to put a mask on and some tight-fitting sunglasses, which can help reduce the exposure to the nose and to the eyes. People do talk about local honeys. The evidence is not supportive of that, but
If it works,
do it. Honey is, you're supporting local businesses, first of all. And secondly, it's a great way to use something that actually might help the odd individual.
Mm-hmm. And showering then in the evening time, that's a good idea too, isn't it?
It's a great idea to do that because you're essentially, if you've been outside all day, you come home, that pollen is stuck to your skin, stuck to your hair. So having a shower will actually decrease the burden of pollen on you.
Mm. Can hay fever exacerbate snoring?
It absolutely can. It can cause inflammation of the upper airways. And if you have a small airway as it is, if you are overweight, if you're at risk of what we call obstructive sleep apnea, and you have inflammation in these areas, it will increase the risk of snoring.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything that people can do if there is a link between the snoring and the hay fever, or this person actually in general is looking for a solution for a snorer?
I mean, first of all, try and get on top of the hay fever. Second of all, we now have very effective ways of investigating whether this individual has this condition called obstructive sleep apnea, which is actually very common in the population. And they can have a sleep study done at home, which can evaluate them as to whether they have it or not. But certainly the two...
Would you need to go to somebody like you? Okay, you'd need a specialist to
tee that up.
Now, Michelle has been in touch. She gets all the symptoms of severe hay fever, but not from pollen and not from being outdoors. It happens when I change rooms or I'm in the office. I've had a negative dust allergy test. What could it be?
So it's a great question. People can actually have chronic, non-allergic rhinosinusitis, which means that we can't pick up what their triggers are, but nonetheless they have the symptoms of otherwise hay fever without having a skin prick test that is positive or a clinical history which is suggestive. Those individuals are actually trickier to treat because they don't respond as well to the traditional antihistamines, nasal steroids, the Montelukast Singulair treatments. In terms of a skin prick test or negative testing, just because you have a skin prick test which is negative, it doesn't absolutely rule out that you don't have an allergen. So the clinical history alongside that is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So we see patients who, anytime they see a cat, they stream, yet they can have a skin prick test which is negative. But we can't, on the basis of that, say, oh, the cat's absolutely not a problem.
Right. But allergy testing in general, are you in favour of that? Does it work? Does it tell you what you need to know? Or?
So again, it's part of the whole picture. So yeah, the jigsaw puzzle, it's not the be all and end all of testing. It's really helpful in terms of, you know, showing the patient, look, this is actually what you're reacting to, and actually highlighting sometimes allergens that they might not have been aware of, such as birch pollen, etc., that we do test for, or even some molds such as aspergillus that can be in the atmosphere. So it is very helpful. I do it all the time in my severe asthma patients, and anyone comes in with bad allergic rhinosinusitis, I will be doing skin prick testing.
You will be doing that, yeah. Rosalind would like you now to diagnose this, if you can, live on air. So Rosalind was gardening all day last week. The next day, she had a sore throat, phlegmy cough and a headache, and I was feeling cold and weak. Is it hay fever or the flu?
I would say it is more likely to be hay fever. If it only lasted for a day or two, it's not the flu. And what's actually really interesting in terms of, you know, viral infections is well, you always hear of people say, oh, I was on a flight and someone was sneezing beside me and now I've got a cold 3 or 4 hours later. It absolutely was not that person who was beside you on the flight. We used to actually, in a past life over in Canada, actually introduce the cold virus into people's noses to see how they would respond in terms of asthma, non-asthma. And it takes 3 to 5 days before your symptoms actually become present.
Right.
So most likely this is an allergy.
It's a hay
trigger.
Fever.
Yeah.
And now, someone wants to know why air purifiers are not mentioned more. Do they work? Are they part of the solution?
So they can be part of the armamentarium. So these are called HEPA filters, for example, which are high efficiency particulate air filters. So they really trap really small microparticles and they won't trap viruses. So they're not good for COVID and the likes of that.
Mm-hmm.
We don't routinely recommend them. The evidence doesn't really support them. But there are individuals that I see who say, I got a HEPA filter put into my house and it was full of dust and I'm doing much better now.
Yeah. So if it works, it's like the honey.
If it works, it's not going to harm you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that person's also taking...
It might harm your bank balance.
Right. That person's also taking a daily antihistamine. So that might be helping too. Patrick, we could keep going because the questions are flying in. We might have you back maybe as the season continues to take more of those questions.
Yeah, my pleasure.
And people can go to the Asthma Society website. You mentioned pollen.ie as well.
Pollen.ie and the asthma website. I've actually become involved in the asthma website for the last couple of years. It really is a phenomenal resource.
Okay, well, that's where people can go for more information. Professor Patrick Mitchell, thank you very much for being with us.